Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Today, inshallah, I will continue my talk on the notion of peace in the Holy Quran. In my previous sermon, in part one, we examined some of the early revealed passages in the Quran on peace, which show that peace was central to the Prophet Muhammad's mission from day one. The very first divine revelation to the Prophet in the Night of Power or Laylatul Qadr centered on peace, if you recall. Peace is so crucial to the Quran's vision for a good life that it calls paradise the abode of peace, Dar es Salaam. In other words, the highest reward for the righteous is everlasting peace. And this is very, very important for the purpose of understanding the place of peace in the overall vision of our sacred scripture. I also mentioned that the earliest vision of peace in the Quran were personal and heavenly. Personal and heavenly. The earliest vision of peace in the Quran focused on inner peace. Inner peace, a peace which can be attained by individual believers. I ended my talk last time by saying that as the Prophet's mission unfolded in Arabia, peace took on a social dimension in the Quran. In other words, peace at the societal level. Today, I will elaborate on this theme in the Quran, social peace. I will focus on the so-called war passages in the Quran. Now, these passages, the war passages in the Quran, often receive a lot of attention and scrutiny, particularly in anti-Islam circles. You can think of today's sermon also as a short history of Islam or early Islam according to the Holy Quran. I'm going to share with you a truckload of verses from the Quran. I hope that I would not overwhelm you. For those of you who are interested in this subject, I suggest that you write down the references that I make, chapters and verse numbers, so that then you can investigate further on your own. It is very critical that you write down the passages in the order that I recite them. In a minute, you will find out why the order is so critical. Now, before we delve into these passages, let me make a couple of important points. The first point. There are two methodology flaws in most studies of war passages in the Quran. And because of these flaws, people incorrectly conclude that Islam's prophet was a prophet of sword, or the Prophet of Islam was a warmonger. Now, not only Islam's critics, but also Muslim extremists, such as ISIS and Al-Qaeda, view the Prophet as a warrior, not so much interested in peace. So that's one area where Muslim extremists and anti-Islam folks, Muslim critics, actually have a common view of the Prophet Muhammad. Now, the first flaw is that these folks do not study the war passages in chronological order. And that's why I mentioned that make sure you write down these verses in the order that I recite them. The order of these passages that appear in the Quran according to timeline is so crucial for a proper understanding of war and peace in the Quran. If we don't pay attention to the chronological order in which these verses were revealed, essentially we end up erasing the context for the revelation of these passages. Now, to avoid this flaw, I will arrange the word passages in the order of time that they were revealed in response to an event. Now, the good news is that we have good records of the timestamp for these verses. Very good records on those. Now, the second common flaw in the study of word passages in the Quran is that most researchers rely heavily on biographies of the Prophet Muhammad to study the word verses in the Quran. Now the problem is this. Biographies of the Prophet Muhammad, as well as the collection of his sayings, hadith, were written centuries after the Prophet's death, when forgery was commonplace. Now, I don't dismiss wholesome the Prophet's biographies. They have a value for us. But we should read the biographies and also the sayings of the Prophet Muhammad in light of what the Holy Quran says. The Quran should inform what is plausible in Prophet's biographies and sayings, not the other way around. This point is super critical for you guys to remember. Now, the second point that I would like to make before we delve into the study of word passages in the Quran is that there is a difference between peace and pacifism. Peace and pacifism. They are not synonymous. Unfortunately, a lot of folks confuse the two. They think that since there are war passages in the Quran, Islam is not a peaceful religion. What does pacifism mean? And how is it different from peace? Well, a pacifist is a person whom will not resort to violence of any sort under any circumstance, period. In his mind, in the mind of a pacifist, there is no action, no matter how brutal, no matter how offensive it may be, that would warrant using force or violence against it. So any kind of violence or use of force is completely unwarranted according to pacifism. Peace, on the other hand, does not require total rejection of the use of force. And this is super critical for the rest of my talk today. Peace does not mean that you would categorically reject use of force. You can be pro-peace and at the same time believe that under some strict conditions, it is permissible to use force to combat aggression and to combat criminals, those who are intent to destroy you. And here comes the doctrine of just war. The doctrine of just war, which, by the way, is embraced by Islam. And for that matter, is embraced definitely by Judaism. And even though it is questionable whether the Gospels in the Christian scripture endorse just war, definitely later Christian theologians in the Middle Ages, such as Saint Augustine, embraced the notion of just war. It's probably subject for a different conversation. You may ask why. Why did later Christian theologians embrace the doctrine of just war? The reason is you cannot build a civilization without embracing at least some level of force and violence, at least under some special circumstances. Now, Islam is not a pacifist religion, but it is a peaceful religion. Islam contends that at times war may become unavoidable. For what purpose? To what end does Islam permit war? To remove the obstacles of peace. To remove the obstacles of peace. The end game must always be peace, not power or domination over others by the use of force. Now, with these key points in mind, let's begin. The Prophet Muhammad's mission spanned 23 years, 13 years in Mecca and 10 years in Medina after the Prophet Muhammad was forced to flee Mecca. Now, according to the Quran, in the 13-year Meccan period, the Prophet Muhammad's religious movement was peaceful in characters. There are several themes to the revelations that the Prophet Muhammad received in the Meccan period, which clearly show the peaceful nature, the non-belligerent nature of his mission. Since we don't have a whole lot of time, I just like to bring out three themes in the early revelations to Prophet Muhammad, which shows the non-belligerent and peaceful nature of his mission. The first theme is tolerance. And tolerance appears most vividly in chapter 109 of the Holy Quran, titled Al-Kafirun. By the way, since we don't have much time, I will skip reading the Arabic of these verses and just content with the English translation of those. Chapter 109 in the Quran is short. It only has 6 verses. Here we go. Say, pagans, I don't worship what you worship. You do not worship what I worship. I will never worship what you worship, and you will never worship what I worship. To you is your religion, and to me is my religion. Notice that the same idea is repeated 4 times in a row in this short chapter. The last verse is critical. Lakum dinukum waliyadin. To you is your religion, and to me, my religion. Now, this verse is a clear expression of tolerance for other belief systems. Now, those of you who are familiar with the Holy Quran know that the Quran does not accept paganism as a valid religion. Yet, the Quran says pagans have an inherent right to worship any god they choose. In modern human rights language, this last verse in chapter 109 supports freedom of conscience. Freedom of conscience. The Quran clearly supports freedom of conscience. The second theme in the Meccan revelation is peaceful coexistence. Peaceful coexistence for all parties in Mecca at the time of the Prophet Muhammad. The Quran consistently warns pagans of the torments of hellfire. However, the Quran does not allow their conversion by force. Let me give you a couple of passages from the Quran that categorically reject the notion of conversion by force. Chapter 2, verse 256, a famous verse in the Quran, La ikraha fid din. There is no compulsion in religion. Again, remember, these verses were all revealed in the Meccan era. The next example of tolerance, chapter 10, verse 99. If your Lord had willed, everyone on earth would have believed, all of them altogether. Will you then coerce the people to become believers? In other words, the verse says, it was easy for God to make everybody, all human beings, in such a way that they would all submit to Him and to His religion. But you know what? It was not His will. It was not His design. So, do not try to be more Catholic than the Pope, right? Don't try to be more Catholic than the Pope. The third theme about tolerance is what in modern language we call multiculturalism. Multiculturalism. Now, multiculturalism, which is celebrated so much, particularly in the modern West, rests on diversity. And that's what the Quran promotes, diversity as the will of God. Let me give you a few passages from the Meccan period. Chapter 30, verse 22. Here it is. And among God's signs is the creation of the heavens and earth, and the diversity of your languages and complexions. Surely in that are signs for all living beings. Now, language is the basis of culture. So, when the Quran says diverse languages is a sign of God, it means that God willed cultural diversity for humans. Complexion essentially is a metaphor for races. So racial diversity was also the will of God. The next verse, chapter 49, verse 13. People, Ya Ayyuhannas, people, we have created you all from a single man and a single woman, and made you into nations and tribes, so that you should get to know one another. In God's sight, the noblest of you is the most pious of you. Again, this speaks to ethnic diversity, right? Different nations, different tribes, ethnic diversity. The next passage endorses religious diversity. Chapter 2, verse 62 endorses religious pluralism. Check it out. The believers, in other words, followers of the Prophet Muhammad, the believers, the Jews, the Christians, and the Sabians, all those who believe in God and the last day and do good works, will have their rewards with their Lord. No fear for them, nor will they grieve. So clearly, the Quran endorses religious diversity. Now, if you want to appreciate how novel, how revolutionary this Quranic passage that I just read to you, which speaks to religious pluralism, is, put this verse in the context of the 7th century, when Islam emerged in Arabia. The 7th century was the height of the Dark Ages in Europe, an age where the Inquisition ruled. Anyone anyone in that period in Europe who practiced a religion other than the one preached by the church would be tortured, would be burnt at the stake. The Quran again clearly instructed the Prophet's followers in Mecca to celebrate and cherish diversity, not reject it. So in a nutshell, the Meccan revelation incorporated the principles of tolerance, peaceful coexistence, and diversity, principles that are foundational for peace. You cannot really stand for peace unless you believe in these principles. Now, as the Prophet Muhammad's message gained more followers in Mecca, as the Prophet's new religion gained more followers in Mecca, the pagan establishment, the Meccan aristocracy, was alarmed. They were shaken. And understandably, there was a backlash, a pagan backlash, to the Prophet Muhammad's new religion in Mecca. Let me just give you one example of that backlash. The pagan slave owners tortured the new Muslim converts among the slaves. The very first martyr in the history of Islam was a woman slave. Did you know that? The very first martyr in the history of Islam was a woman, and she was a slave. She was tortured to death by pagan slave owners. Sumayyah, by the way, her name was Sumayyah. Yet, despite the pagan cruelty and persecution, the Quran called on Muslims to show restraint. Despite all the cruelty of the pagans, the Quran called on early Muslims to be non-violent. Let me give you just one example from the Holy Quran, a verse that was revealed in that time period in Mecca. Chapter 41, verse 34. Good and evil are not equal. Good and evil are not equal. Repel evil with the highest good, and behold, your enemy will become a devoted patron. What does the verse say? It says, do not respond to evil with evil. Respond to evil with the highest good. So that's what the Prophet Muhammad was preaching in the Meccan period. And that's what Muslims were supposed to be like, non-violent. Now, the small Muslim community of Mecca followed what God had asked of them, to be non-violent, to restrain themselves from responding to evil with evil. And you know what? God praised those early Muslims for their self-restraint in the face of pagan provocations. Let me give you just one passage from the Holy Quran, which is so beautiful, one of my favorites. Chapter 25, verse 63. وَعِبَادُ الرَّحْمَنِ وَعِبَادُ الرَّحْمَنِ الَّذِينَ يَمْشُونَ عَلَى الْأَرْضِ هَوْنًا وَإِذَا خَاطَبَهُمُ الْجَاهِلُونَ قَالُوا سَلَامًا. The servants of the All-Merciful who walk humbly upon the earth, and when the unruly taunt them, they reply, peace. Isn't that incredible? Isn't that incredible? When the unruly taunt them, they reply, Salama, peace be unto you. The verse essentially says, that the believer's response to pagan insults and injury was peace, not violence. When the pagan establishment failed to subdue the Prophet Muhammad, when the pagan establishment's campaign of terror did not succeed, they threatened to kill the Prophet Muhammad. The Prophet concluded that his community could not safely practice their faith in Mecca anymore. That's when the Prophet migrated from Mecca to the neighboring city Medina in Arabia. And this migration was a major milestone in his ministry. Medina was a multicultural community at that time. Jews, Christians, pagans, and others lived together. However, Medina had a big problem. Medina suffered from civil war. Tribes in Medina fought over land rights. They fought over water rights. They were looking for an honest mediator, an honest mediator to bring peace to their city. And in the Prophet Muhammad, after he migrated to Medina, Medina found such a mediator. One of the first tasks attended by the Prophet Muhammad after his migration was to invite the tribal leaders to negotiate a treaty. That treaty is called the Constitution of Medina, and luckily that treaty has survived over the centuries. Now, according to this treaty, Medinan tribes agreed, first of all, to live peacefully together. And secondly, they agreed to jointly fight against any foreign invasion. And thirdly, and perhaps more importantly for our purposes today, they agreed that if there were any dispute between parties in Medina, the dispute would be referred to the Prophet Muhammad for resolution. Now, hear me out. Contrary to what later Muslim tradition claims, the Prophet Muhammad did not become the ruler of Medina. Tribal chiefs ruled by consensus. The Prophet simply functioned as a holy man to arbitrate unresolvable disputes. So when there was a dispute in town that the parties could not resolve, they would go to Prophet Muhammad for arbitration. Now, in Medina, the Quran again reminded the believers, the Muslims, the importance of peace. Let me give you one example. Chapter 2, verse 208. Remember, this verse was revealed in Medina. Believers, enter into peace altogether. Do not follow the footsteps of Satan, for the Satan is an open enemy. What does this verse say? Satan plants the seed of animosity, hatred, and conflict in people's hearts. Satan is the enemy of peace. Whoever does not believe in peace is a follower of Satan, according to the Holy Quran. Now, the success of the Prophet in Medina was not lost on the pagan establishment in Mecca. They were following what the Prophet Muhammad was doing in Medina. The pagan establishment was worried that the Prophet's new religion would delegitimize their rule. their opposition, you know, the establishment in Mecca was not so interested in theology. They were interested in power, and they knew that if this new religion of Muhammad takes root in Arabia, it would delegitimize their rule. That's why they fought the Prophet Muhammad. So the pagan establishment of Mecca raided Medina's herds. Sometimes they would send their agents to kidnap Muslims who lived in Medina to force them to come back to Mecca and to recant and return to paganism. So the Meccan establishment continued to harass Muslims in Medina. Ultimately, when all else failed, the Meccan pagans decided to send an army to Medina to uproot the Prophet's Muslim community. They sent an army to Medina to crush the Prophet Muhammad and the early Muslim community in Medina. Now, it was against this backdrop of ceaseless hostility by pagans that the first war passages were revealed to the Prophet Muhammad. Now, I took you through the scenic route so that now you have hopefully a very good perspective on the backdrop for the revelation of the so-called war passages in the Quran. First, the Quran authorized war in defense of community. That was the first kind of war passage that was revealed to the Prophet Muhammad, authorization of war in defense of community, when the community comes under attack. And here is the authorization passage, chapter 22, verses 39 and 40. Pay attention to the parameters that the verse sets for warfare. Those who have been attacked are permitted to take up arms because they have been wronged. God has the power to help them. Those who have been driven unjustly from their homes only for saying, "Our Lord is God." If God did not repel some people by means of others, many monasteries, churches, synagogues, and mosques where God's name is much invoked would have been destroyed. God is sure to help those who help His cause. God is strong and mighty. Why did God authorize Muslims to fight? Because if they would not fight, many monasteries, churches, synagogues, and mosques where God's name is much invoked would have been destroyed. The Quran mentions three major confrontations between the Meccan pagan army and the Muslim community in Medina. Those of you who are familiar with the early history of Islam, Ghazwa-e Badr, Uhud, and Khandaq. The Holy Quran mentions these three episodes of warfare between the pagan army and the Muslim army. Now, in all three instances, the Meccan army started the war, not Muslims. The Meccan army started the war. Almost all war passages in the Quran appear in the context of these three wars, which, by the way, happened over a three-year period. Let me repeat one more time. Almost all the war passages in the Quran appear in the context of the wars fought in these three-year period in response to pagan aggression. Now, since the Muslim community was facing an existential threat, the Quran mandated fighting in defense of community. It is a duty. Do you get it? First, the Quran authorized war in defense of community. When it became very obvious that the pagan army was about to attack Medina, this verse was revealed, which essentially asked Muslims that it is their duty to fight. Chapter 2, verses 190 and 191. Fight in the path of God with those who enter into combat against you, but do not commit aggression. Do not commit aggression. God does not love aggressors. Fight them, meaning the pagans. Fight them with deadly force wherever you encounter them, and expel them from those places from which they exiled you. For coercion of conscience is more grievous than fighting. And just to make sure Muslims do not mistake defensive war with aggression, with aggressive wars, the next verse qualifies. Verse 193 in chapter 2. If they stop fighting, meaning the pagan army, if they stop fighting, God is forgiving and merciful. Fight them until there is no longer any coercion of conscience, and until religion is God's. If they cease hostilities, there can be no further hostility except towards aggressors. Now, the last phrase in this verse, يَكُونَ الدِّينُ لِلَّهِ, the religion is God's, essentially is another way of saying until freedom to worship God is established. In other words, the verse tells Muslims continue fighting the pagans until freedom to worship God is established. Now, the passages that I shared with you, they clearly show that the Quran permits war exclusively in self-defense. When a community is under attack, when a community is victimized. Let me be as clear as I can be. Wars of aggression, preemptive wars, they are not permitted by the Holy Quran. Contrary to what extremist groups such as ISIS say, wars of aggression, preemptive wars, are not permitted by the Holy Quran. Even in the midst of war, the Quran reminded Muslims in Medina that they should seek peace with their sworn enemies. Chapter 8, verse 61. If they, meaning aggressors, if they incline toward peace, you must also incline toward peace, trusting God. He is all hearing and all knowing. Now, 5 years after the migration to Medina, the Meccan pagans signed a peace treaty with the Prophet Muhammad. Now, after this peace treaty with the pagans was signed, suddenly the theme of revelation to the Prophet Muhammad, the tone of the revelation to the Prophet Muhammad changes. Revelation prepares Muslims for reconciliation. Because the war is now over. Now revelation prepares Muslims for reconciliation with their old enemies in Mecca. Chapter 60, verses 7 and 8. God may still bring about affection between you and your present enemies. God is all powerful. God is most forgiving and merciful, and He does not forbid you to deal kindly and justly with anyone who has not fought you for your faith or driven you out of your homes. God loves the just. Now finally, the Meccan pagans gave up fighting the Prophet Muhammad. They threw in the towel. They allowed the Prophet and his followers to return home to Mecca after years of exile. The Prophet Muhammad triumphantly returned home. Now, as Muslims entered Mecca triumphantly, there was no battle. There was no bloodshed. The Prophet was not vindictive. He declared general amnesty in Mecca. The pagans who had persecuted the Prophet, the pagans who had tortured early Muslims and waged wars on the Prophet, they were all forgiven. Chapter 48 is titled Al-Fath, Success. This chapter was revealed after the Prophet's triumphant return to Mecca. Verse 26 in this chapter informs why the Prophet and his followers did not take revenge, why they were not vindictive of pagans of Mecca. Why? The verse tells us that it was because God had instilled Sakina in their hearts. Last time, for those of you that remember, I told you what Sakina means in the Holy Quran. Sakina means divine peace. God filled the hearts of the Prophet and his early followers with his peace, his serenity and calm. Here is verse 26 in chapter 48. Behold, the pagans instilled in their hearts a war fever, the war fever of the unruly. But God sent down His peace, Sakina, on His messenger and on the believers, and constrained them with the word of piety, and they proved worthy and deserving of it. God is all knowing. So the pagans had a war fever in their hearts, which made them hateful, vindictive, aggressive. This war fever made them warmongers. On the other hand, God had filled the hearts of the Prophet and his followers with Sakina, with a divine peace, and that made them peaceful. After Muslims returned to Mecca from exile, God reminded them in Mecca again that they should be forgiving and just. They should be forgiving and just towards whom? Towards the vanquished pagans. Now that God gave you victory over the pagans, Muslims, you need to be forgiving and just. Chapter 5, verse 8. Believers, be steadfast in your devotion to God and bear witness in fairness. Do not let hatred of others lead you away from justice, but adhere to justice, for that is closer to piety. We're running out of time, and I have to stop here. And hopefully you got a good understanding of the peace narrative in the Holy Quran. This was a short history of early Islam according to the Holy Quran. Let me make a couple of concluding remarks. Islam's Prophet Muhammad was a peacemaker, contrary to what Muslim extremists and also Islam's critics claim. Islam is not a pacifist religion. However, Islam is a religion of peace. Its founder, the Prophet Muhammad, was indeed a prophet of peace. There is no concept of holy war in the Quran. There is absolutely nothing holy about war. Yet, in rare circumstances, when a community is under attack or victimized, the Quran permits war as the absolute last resort. In the Quran, war is exclusively and strictly permitted for self-defense. The end game must always be peace. Remember this. Even if you are forced into waging war, the end game must always be peace.